This is our league, and this is your league. From the 55-yard line on CFL America Radio and the Sports History Network.
This is a league of A's and BCs. It's green and red and gold and black and blue. This is a league with two official languages and many unofficial languages. It's East versus West, wheat versus iron, love versus hate. This is a league where superstars are extraordinary and ordinary at the same time. It's a league of ice, of fog, of mud and wind. And for one Sunday in November, it's the nation's glue. This is a league as diverse as a country, a league of Jacksons and Kwongs, Johnsons, Moscas, O'Shea's, and Haji Razulis. This is his league, her league, and their league. It's my league, and it's your league. This is our league.
Hey, and welcome to From the 55-Yard Line. This is Greg. And usually, before we do, we sit down, we do our interview, our pre-recorded interview with our guest. Scott and I usually sit down, talk, catch up on life, talk CFL, talk NFL, talk XFL, whatever the topic may be. Scott and I usually sit down and talk about it before we go into the interview. Well, unfortunately, prior to us recording our interview with Dr. Frank Costantino, power went out. We had tornado warnings in Birmingham, and power went out on Scott's end. So I want to apologize for everybody who was expecting to see Scott this episode. I feel bad. It's been a while since him and I have actually done a show together, but we're getting there. Since I'm in Japan, he's on the other side of the world. Well, actually, most of you guys are on the other side of the world, as most listeners are in North America. We will figure this out. So, hey, thank you very much for listening, everybody. And like I said, we're going to have Scott here back here shortly. Sure hope so. So with that said, this episode today is with the premier Canadian football scholar, Dr. Frank Costantino. And Dr. Frank Costantino is the most interesting man in Canadian football, if you ask me. Drafted by the Hamilton Tiger Cats, he played in Grey Cups. He has won Grey Cups. He has won Vanier Cups as a coach. And he has a lengthy bibliography to his name. There's so much to be said about the good doctor. Such a gracious man. Such a nice man. I could have talked to him all day. There's just so much there just talking with him, and I really enjoyed sitting down with him and doing our interview. So, folks, with that said, I'm going to stop talking here and let you listen to my interview with him, and I hope you enjoy listening to my interview with him as much as I enjoyed interviewing him and talking and learning so much. And one little tidbits of trivia before I hand off to the interview, that Frank was the last touchdown pass by a Canadian team against an NFL team back in 1960, when Hamilton beat the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, were part of the AFL back then, but they were, you know, part of the NFL now. But he was on the only winning team to beat the NFL on the football field. So I did not realize that going into this interview. So it was a very pleasant surprise when he told me that. So, hey, yeah, I'm rambling on here. I do apologize. But thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for coming back to the podcast. Now that we are back on a regular basis after my long move here overseas. And by all means, please, if you have any ideas, any suggestions for shows for us to do, feel free to reach out to us. I'm at CFL America on Twitter. We are also at cflamerica.ca at gmail.com. And Scott is at AdamsonSL on Twitter. And also, give Scott's website, his articles, a read. I was actually reading a few of those today myself. So it's at AdamsonMedia.com. So without further ado, here is my interview with Dr. Frank Cosentino, Canadian football historian. Frank, welcome to the show. It's greetings from Japan and apologies to everybody out there listening. Scott was online with us, but there's a tornado warning in Birmingham, so he had to sign off on here before we could start recording. Hopefully he will pop back on. Hey Frank, thank you very much for joining us, and by us I mean Scott, even though he's not with us here at the moment. It's wonderful to have you on. It's great to talk CFL football, and as luck, bad luck would have it, we're talking about CFL history, CFL football, just a couple days removed from the fact that the Alouettes have now been returned to the league for ownership. So, yeah, I want to talk to you about that, but we'll start off talking about how I first came to know you, and that was through your book, A Passing Game, which is the first book on Canadian football history, but Canadian history. I think I read cover to cover. How did that book come about? If you could tell people, because it is a great, it's a wonderful book. It's a very scholarly book too, on top of that.
Well, yeah. Thanks, Greg, very much. There was a previous book called Canadian Football, The Great Cup Years. And it was my master's thesis at the University of Alberta. And it was really the first book I'm aware of that was published with the history of what was going on from Grey Cup 09 to Grey Cup 68. And so I took that as the model. And, I'm attached to football in so many ways. But anyways, at the end of the first book, within a year, it just so happened that I was hired as a coach at the University of Western Ontario, a football coach, and also an assistant professor at that time in sport history. So, and I worked on my dissertation at that time, which was a history of professionalism in Canadian sport. And I finished that by 73. So as it turned out, I decided to collect material about the CFL from that first date, from 1968. And well, I went up to 1974. And I mentioned to you just in casual conversation that I was introduced to a whole gallery of football items that were going into the Sports Hall of Fame, the Hamilton Football Hall of Fame in Hamilton. And when I went down there, I gathered so much information that I decided I was writing in other sports, but enjoying the football because I had played the game and wanted to write about it, wanted to try to be objective about it, and just chronicle either the trend to professionalism, the Americanization of the game, or rule changes. They would be the three items I was going to look at. And lo and behold, it came out. It was a cover there. And when when it went out of print, I decided that I would break it up into two books, and went to a do-it-yourself publishing company.
Okay.
And so I built on that eventually to produce another book, and I'm working on the fifth book and on Canadian football this year. And yes, it is a shame that Montreal has fallen into that abyss where just after having so much to look forward to, looks like someone has pulled the rug out from under it, but they'll bounce back because people can see what is going to happen, what has begun to happen, and strong ownership and good coaches. And that whole area of Quebec has got some excellent football teams that traditionally win the Vanier Cup, which is the national collegiate football program cup.
Right. Well, when you played back in the 60s, when you won those two Grey Cups, when it came to American professional football and Canadian professional football, things were pretty much on par from what I recall reading, in terms of not only stadium size and attendance wise. I mean, I know there's some differences, obviously, with what the population size of the country, but was also the pay scale, was that pretty much commensurate with the end? I mean, what were the differences back when you played?
Well, you might not believe this, Greg, but the Canadian dollar, I started in 1960 and I played through to 1969. The first few years of 1960, the Canadian dollar was about 10% higher than the American dollar. So, and the NFL football wasn't as money conscious, if that's the proper word. They didn't have the big television contracts. They didn't have a lot of income. They had to rely on who was going to play for them at a sum that was less than what they could have made in Canada. And to top it off, if you came, well, you could find a job outside of football and combine it with the practices that were held, because all the practices were after 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could attract an American to come up and play, and he could find a job and then also go out to football practice afterwards. So he would have double the income that he could normally make out of that 90% American dollar.
Right.
And really, we weren't that far off. In 1961, the AFL was just starting, mm-hmm. and Buffalo was in his first year. And Hamilton and Buffalo are pretty close as far as geography. So Buffalo, trying to attract people from Canada to come watch their game, they challenge the Tiger Cats to a football game, exhibition game, and hoping that they would show the public that they're way better than the CFL. Well, it didn't work out that way. Hamilton beat Buffalo. The Buffalo stations and media, they were all over the football team. And you know, I was fortunate. I was able to play in that game.
Well, you're opening a whole box of other questions now that I want to ask you about that game. First off, how'd you do? What were your, do you remember your stats for the game?
Oh, well, this was my second year of football. There were four quarterbacks.
Okay.
And so I got to play the last maybe 3-4 minutes of the game and threw a touchdown pass for, I think it was 70 yards in all, because I'd noticed on the sidelines, one of the big differences between American football and Canadian football is unlimited motion in Canadian football. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the United States, you have to wait for the ball to be snapped before any movement.
Right.
So, and then motion. I was sitting on the bench and I saw one play where Ralph Goldston, who had played with Philadelphia Eagles and was in his fourth or fifth year with Hamilton. Anyways, I saw he was able to swing out of the bathroom, the formation and head straight up. And nobody was picking you up. So I kind of marked it in my mind. And the first thing I did when I went in there, I called that play and told him to go straight up, you know, and he winked because he knew that it was going to happen too. So anyways, it worked out well. Had a chance to play, scored a touchdown. And it was, you know, Bernie Filoni was the top quarterback there. Tom Dimitroff was another one, and Jerry Eisen was another one. So I was number four, but the only Canadian. But I think I helped my position by doing that.
Well, yeah, I would say you did. You did with your career after that. You know, so in that game, and if memory serves me correct, you guys used two sets of rules. Was it one set for one half, or what did you guys? I would imagine it was one set for each half, instead of going from quarter to quarter to quarter, because that would completely throw things off.
I think you're right. I think that's what it was. The each half had its own set of, but we scored more points whatever the whatever half was being used at that time. And I know that, you know, I've been going down to Florida, I mentioned before, Florida around Largo, Tampa, mm-hmm. and a lot of people called it Buffalo South. And that game would come up when I was down there. And they'd say, you guys didn't beat Buffalo, did you? Really? Did you do that? And they couldn't believe that a team from the CFL would have won the game, even at that time.
Right. Well, and at that time, what was the reaction in the Canadian media to that victory?
Well, you know, really, there wasn't. Hamilton had two newspapers at the time, and there was a story because it was. I think it was around August the 5th or 6th, mm-hmm. something like that. And the league was just about to begin. And that was the last to do with the, it was kind of just not ho-hum. Everybody had a big kick out of it.
And
they were happy, but I don't think you'd mention it to any Buffalo people right now.
Okay. Well, yeah, after get the way they got bounced in the playoffs this year, that it just added more salt in the wound. Well, when you, during that time period, and it's going to, with the talking about the media, was the CFL being broadcast in the CBC, or was just everything by, was it the only coverage on radio Because that's when I go back and I read stuff, and I'm like, I never really hear much about what the TV landscape was in Canada during that time. Obviously, knowing what I know about American football history, you know, TV was a huge part of the landscape starting in the 60s. What was the landscape media-wise with the CFL back then?
Well, in the 60s and well into the 70s, only the CBC telecast the football game, the CFL football games. And that was part of the problem. There was no TSN at that time. CTV was, it was just opening up. They only had one or two stations at that time, but it was strictly a CBC operation. And actually that played right into the hands of when the CTV took over, felt that it was strong enough that it could provide a network. They cut off the CBC transmission because it was their baby now. And there was a tremendous rebellion, if you want to call it that, by the public saying, you know, it's a cultural item. It's one that defines our Canadianism and it's our culture. You have to be able to allow the CBC to telecast that. They're talking to the CTV people. Mm-hmm. And so there was a law passed in Parliament, actually, that that would have to happen. CTV was the proper carrier, but they would pick up a lot of the CBC stations on the way so that they could watch it as well, because it was a Canadian heritage cultural thing.
Right. Well, it's, and that kind of sounds like what they do down here in the States. For instance, in Chicago, if the game's on ESPN Monday Night Football, it'll be on over the air broadcast as part of that contractual thing. So the CFL, if I'm hearing it, was not a coast to coast. Was it on coast to coast? So I mean, with only four games each week, did everybody in the country? Well, I mean, TSN obviously broadcasts everything, and you got, you know, only one game being played at each time. But in Canada with the CFL, were you able to have a communal experience watching each CFL game?
Yeah, pretty well. You played every week, and usually a Saturday or a. Well, Sunday didn't come in till 62, 63. Okay. So usually the games were Saturday.
Okay.
And also, there wasn't. I don't think people had any problems that way. I'm trying to recall back and see what happened. It wasn't a big thing there were only, well, after 1954, BC Lions came in 1954.
Right.
And so they made up the ninth team. And so one team would always have a bye.
Yeah.
During the week. And then you always knew that your Grey Cup game was going to be sometime in between the third week of December, second, fourth, that type of thing.
Right. And back then, what was the influence of the NFL? Was there much NFL coverage north of the border?
That's really, there's a whole thesis you could write on that. there was, that's why part of my thesis, I talked about the trend to the Americanization of football.
Right.
Okay, so in the 1950s, our Governor General came out with a program where Canadian music, Canadian culture had to appear as minimum 62% because the music was being sent in, you know, mostly American music would come on and be played by disc jockeys or things like that. And there was no opportunity for people of talent mm-hmm. to be able to put their music out. It's Canadian. It wouldn't, right. wouldn't be a good thing. So the that happened, and there were all sorts of naysayers that said, "You know, boy, yeah, watch this thing tank. How are they gonna make people play Canadian music type of thing?" And this gets over into the football as well,
right?
But and so it worked though. It worked. The stations had to do it to maintain their license. And one of the things my wife and I mentioned when we go down to Florida, we can be in a place where music would be played, mm-hmm. whether you're buying a dress or whether you're buying a suit or there's a bicycle or whatever. And all of a sudden, a Canadian music item would come on the overhead speakers type of thing, and just recognize it wouldn't have happened had this Governor General back in the 50s, the Massey Commission, it right. wouldn't have happened had that not come through. And so, and part of that has leaked into football.
Right.
You know, you can count the Canadian quarterbacks on your fingers.
Well, right now I've only got one finger.
Yeah.
Nathan Rourke coming down to Jacksonville.
Well, there's now O'Connor is.
Yeah. Unfortunately, and, I say that I'm not happy in saying that, but you know.
Yeah. No, it's there've been all sorts of cases where coaches would close their eyes to mm-hmm. what a Canadian quarterback would do for the team.
Right.
And it made sense, basically, from their point of view, you know, yeah. because the American quarterback has got good coaching, is groomed, he's many coaches are telling him what he can do and what he can't do. Techniques are improved and things like that. Says whereas the thinking was the Canadian quarterbacks weren't getting any training at all, just like you know, every coach who used to come in mm-hmm. to take over, one of the first things they would do is yeah, we got to get some training done on these tackles and these quarterbacks and guards type of thing. But in the last, well, close to 10 years, Canadian university programs have just taken off. The scholarships are there.
Right.
You can talk to your friend Jim Mullins about that.
Yeah.
And because of that, and that's why I think, maybe getting back to Montreal, the Quebec player coming out of those Quebec colleges now are probably among the best American or Canadian. because of the scholarship, the apparatus that they're putting through, the fact that, you know, I think the colleges are part of the program now that is going to stay with football and will do well.
Okay. Well, I mean, that actually brings up a question for me that I really, over the years, now that I'm living in Japan and watching Japanese football and watching Japanese kids play, when I say kids, because I'm 55 years old, it seems like, you know, I'm watching, you know, when I went to the National College Football Championship here, you know, what, enjoying watching Japanese football. And so my question is in Canada, why is it that the CFL do they work at all with these Canadian colleges and universities to develop the talent to bring in the CFL? I mean, let's face it, in the States, the SEC is a farm league for the NFL. We all know that. But to me, as a fan, I love Canada. I love my trips to Canada. They're the most, you know, I had a choice between going to Europe or going to Quebec for my long, you know, for my wife and I, for our vacation before we moved to Japan. And I'm going to Canada because I love Canada and I love the culture. I love the people. But what I get frustrated about is when I watch CFL football, and they're all talking about Americans. They're all talking about the American players. And I know the history. I mean, obviously, you know, import. But I would love to see more Canadian talent playing Canadian football. I mean, and I know has the CFL ever tried to rectify that, you know, to develop that homegrown talent instead of, you know, bringing us Yankees in from the north, from the south to come in and play?
Well, you know, Canadians have a huge inferiority complex. We live next door to the elephant, type of thing. Eh? Yeah. And whatever, if it's American, it's branded as, gee, pretty good. It's Canadian, thinking like that. And that's only an opinion, but right. That transcends into sport. And money, you know, there's each club can't overspend about $5.5 million on their team, right?
Because of that TV contract.
Yeah, yeah. And so you have TSN with a contract of around 50 to 55 million dollars. And in a way, the Canadian colleges do some visitation to camps, to practices, but they put all their faith really in being a group of players to come to their a certain place that'll be picked out where they have to go through a whole bunch of things, and then they come out with a draft. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there is some, but very little money that goes from the CFL to the colleges, to the universities. And part of it is they just don't have the money. Right. You know, well, they're...
Yeah, because I'm thinking here about Randy Ambrosi's CFL 2.0 International, which is great, but... I'm thinking, okay, what about the guys at home? because you've got talent there that should be part of cultural institution. And it's great. I mean, Toshiki Sato is going to be playing for the Calgary Stampeders. He's going from Toronto to Calgary, which is great. But, you know, when I'm watching CFL, I mean, I love Canada. So it's like, I would love to know more about, the backstory of where these kids played college at, because we get, you know, and I always feel bad because, well, when I was in Canada, we would watch TV and it would be mostly American news. And I'm like, can we find something? Okay, good. Canadian news. Okay. This is what I want to see. So, but the CFL, but there have been efforts in the past, and what we're talking now, I guess we're talking a long time ago now, about 50 years, when the CFL was under threat from American football that was going to be addressed by the Parliament when it came to the World Football League. And that's a period of history that, for even when I talk to my friends who know a lot about CFL history, don't know that story. So what was that? How it came about, without giving away the end, how did it ultimately turn out with the WFL, the threat with the World Football League?
I have to go back to 1972, 1973, the owner of the Toronto Telegram newspaper, John Bassett, his son wanted to bring an American team into as part of the World Football League. And he went out and signed,
you're talking Zonka kicking Warfield?
Yeah, there you go. He was going to sign them at $1 million each.
Right.
And they were going to be the flagship of a team from Canada. And the government of Canada, and it stepped in because the CFL said it was going to damage football if the American League came in there, the World Cup. And so Mark Lalonde, who was assistant prime minister type of thing, or Department of Health, he went to bat for the league, and ended up traveling to Saskatchewan, making all sorts of speeches about it's a cultural thing, you shouldn't be allowed to interrupt it, and everything like that. And so, make a long story short, the Memphis Southmen, once they found out that there was that sort of acceptance to them, became the Memphis Southmen. And
they were supposed to be the Toronto Northmen, and then they became the Southmen.
So and then that opened up just a whole there were people who that's kind of a not a dictatorial thing, but that's a position that I know that with some Americans, you go down there, they have an idea that the Canadian government, because they're tied into so many things, that they must be communists, because they're because they pay for your medical assistance, and things like that. So, and I've had people, when I go down there, I've had people say, we compare things and say, well, you guys are communists. What are you doing?
And nothing, as, Frank, nothing gets under my skin more than the ignorance of my fellow Americans about Canada.
Yeah. Well, it's not all. There's some, but anyways, the government stepped in,
right?
It wasn't pleased afterwards that it wasn't pleased that the clubs went on to ignore the universities, ignore people who were coming up, and right. not to do things that meant to be. So the head of the health and welfare was John Monroe, who was from Hamilton, but he came out, and so people, again, they had to use the American reference. He came out with the Monroe Doctrine. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. Well, while the World Football League failed spectacularly, as we all well know, and our friend of the show, Upton Bell, was part of that ownership that ultimately failed spectacularly. Yeah. So now let's fast forward a little bit now to, let's go, then we got a reversal here where Canada comes south to America and Canadian football, and the Baltimore Colts are reborn. And so let's talk about that a little bit, that whole era, yeah. Which I've got my Baltimore Stallion. I like to still call them the Baltimore CFL Colts, because that's really, they were the Colts to me. But I've got my Stallion stuff here. So the brainchild of the whole American expansion, it was all kind of brought about by one person that every American over a certain age is very familiar with. But when John Candy became part owner of the Argonauts, is that specifically when the idea of expanding south began, or had that idea to expand down to the States been percolating well before, you know, the late 80s, early 90s?
Well, I think it happened before John Candy. When the Baltimore ownership in the middle of the night took all their gear to Indianapolis.
Right. So was that when the idea up north, that the CFL up north might expand south to look for new markets and fill in the gaps where the NFL didn't play, or?
Well, I think it was right in the midst of that, okay. but the reality was that the CFL needed money.
Right.
And by initiating membership teams in the States, it was going to bring $3 million per team, roughly, right. And which would be distributed and so on. Baltimore, I think, was a special case, because I don't know if it was so much that they were espoused to Canadian rules. It was just, you know, the CFL to them were Colts for life.
Right.
And the NFL barred them from using that. And so you're right that they were the Stallions. But as far as the fans were concerned, that Colts for life. And so it was almost like, let's go to the football game and show them we don't need them to get a crowd in here and everything like that. And then eventually, Baltimore won this in 95. I think Baltimore won the Great Cup. But at the same time, then new ownership came in the NFL, and Baltimore really folded, and the whole team almost moved to Montreal and became the Alouettes as well. And I think a lot of those players, you know, helped Montreal. I can't remember which they went on a Grey Cup rant for 3 or 4 years, but I don't know. Candy loved football apparently, and Gretzky and McNeil, I think they were a little concerned with that they had to direct some of the money that what they brought in to the other. There was ownership needed money from teams that were making the country their profit. They needed it to stand on their feet. And I don't think that McNeil and Gretzky liked that. And
back then, if I'm not mistaken, the teams in the prairies were struggling. I know it wasn't Saskatchewan and Winnipeg. They were struggling, and the other teams out there, obviously now things are reversed, but
Well, they probably McNeil and Gretzky and Candy, and they brought up who was it, the Notre Dame
Rocket Ismail.
Yeah, Rocket Ismail, he played well, and they played well, but at the same time, I think the three of them felt that they were going to make much more money of this, and instead of their getting the profits that they wanted, it was being redistributed to other teams because of some clause. So I probably forgot most of the stuff down there, but Candy, I think if Candy had lived longer, maybe it might have turned out better for the league in the long run.
Well, when the CFL expanded down south, I mean, the most successful team was Baltimore, with the other teams, really, not, you know, they did not do well. And obviously there was a team in Birmingham, which did well before college season kicked in. And then obviously when the SEC started playing, attendance dropped off. But then you also had a team down in San Antonio, which, you know, the CFL had a great idea of going into markets where there was no NFL competition. Maybe had they gone to, say, places like Portland, or even going to the Dakotas of all places, they might have had a little bit better success. So now, you know, the expansion, with the end of expansion, the league went back to its, it was 9 teams, then 8 teams once Ottawa ran out of steam, the Rough Riders ran out of steam.
Yeah.
We had the Red Blacks come back, and then, you know, the CFL got healthy again. Yeah. But then you know, it seems like the CFL goes in those cycles where it's healthy, it's sick, it's healthy, it's sick. So when the pandemic hit and the league shut down and it closed up shop, it was the only league to do that. What were some of your thoughts when Randy went? Well, first of all, what were some of your thoughts about the league not playing during the pandemic? And most importantly, how do you think the league did in response to the pandemic? Because that's kind of when the financial issues, again, with the league were exposed for everybody to see. So what are some of your thoughts?
Just to go back a little bit to the Southern expansion.
Yeah.
I happened to drive from San Antonio down to Birmingham and go to all these, see if I could talk with people, find out what happened and so on. And invariably, they were saying, yeah, well, Canadian football is really good, but maybe if you had a little less motion or... Canadian football, yeah, very good. But don't you think you should play four downs type of thing?
Like,
there were all these people that were sympathetic, I guess.
Right.
But hey, it was an imitation of football, and they wanted to dress it up like the American game was. Well, that's okay. But getting back to really what you're saying, COVID, it's almost like as soon as people use the term it was mandated, you know, in the public.
Right, because the rules, the quarantine rules were much different up in Canada versus what was happening down in the States, too.
Yeah, but I think myself, they couldn't afford to use the model that the NHL used.
Right.
The NHL played all the games between two cities, and then for Vancouver, Edmonton, I think, after that, for the Stanley Cup, they would do all that, and no spectators to watch. And I think it could do that because they had the money.
Right.
The CFL, you know, they're putting on a big show, and they tried a couple of times to get loans that somehow they were going to be able to pay them back on a rate that was in keeping with what they could do, and they just I think Ambrosi had to cut it, just get by with no club playing football.
Right.
They had to work through all the bonuses and everything like that, and you know, the government helped a little bit, but I think basically they came out of it pretty good. The crowds, you know, the crowds were much improved after the pandemic than when it was there. So it's one of those things that, you know, second guessing is,
right.
You know, it's easy to second guess. It's 2020 vision type of thing, but there's no guarantee that when you're second guessing, there's no guarantee that what you're saying isn't going to run into the same problem that you're trying to cure.
Right. Yeah. It, you know, it was frustrating, obviously, you, me, anybody who's a CFL fan, not to have CFL, you know, football during that time period. But I think, you know, a lot of us realize it's like, okay, the CFL is not the NFL. The NFL proved that they don't need fans in the stands to make money. I mean, and that even goes with merchandising, and, you know, the CFL has issues there, not branding, not marketing, not merchandising. Before you and I hit the record button here, we were talking about my lament of any Montreal Alouettes gear in any of the shops in Montreal. It's very frustrating with how the CFL, you know, kind of markets itself. It seems like it's almost non-existent. However, with that said, you've got a new breed of owners coming in who have come in BC. And we know how well the Prairie provinces do with their marketing. I mean, the Rough Riders, we don't even, I mean, they're writing the book on how to market a team because they represent a whole province. And, you know, but moving forward here, as we're going deeper into the 21st century, the CFL has not only got its old challenges, which, you know, marketing, aging demographics with fan base, because there's also the issue of bringing in new fans. And Frank, I'm guessing you're probably not a gamer. You probably have not played John Mann football. But we've got a whole younger fan base out there down in the state, young fan base down in the States that now has grown up on John Mann football. And even though I'm 55, I still think I'm 12 years old when it comes to video games. So I do have my game systems here. One of my frustrations as a gamer is the CFL games are lacking, I guess I should say. There is a Canadian football video game out there, but in a word, it kind of sucks. And the maker went bankrupt in that. But computers and gaming seem to be the way to attract new fans. Phone apps. CFL doesn't even have an app for my iPhone right now, which is another thing that's driving me crazy. I wrote a piece last night, just very, again, with the Montreal Alouette news about the ownership. It was just one of those moments here in Japan. I just, you know, I don't have too many people to vent with that speak English. So it's like, I just started pounding stuff out and, you know, went on and on and on about, you know, but while I'm writing this, I'm also getting alerts about, well, the XFL. And so, you know, with the XFL, and there is excitement, and actually I'm of the opinion that I think the XFL is going to be a moderate success, at least this time around, because I think there is a demand in the markets that they're in that we're going to, you know, there's always a market for football, it seems like, no matter where. Even in Japan here, there's a very small market, but it's a market nonetheless. But when it comes to, so what are some of your thoughts? What, back when you heard about the XFL and the CFL maybe getting together, and I say this and I ask this to somebody who not only has played on a Canadian football team that has beat an NFL team, but you also played against the NFL when you played for Hamilton and you played against the Buffalo Bills up in Hamilton using a combination of rules. So with all that said, what, you would be the one person when that all came about, you were the first person I thought of going, there is a guy that I'm sure could give some perspective on this. So when it comes to, and I'm very long-winded here, I do apologize in getting to my question, but when it comes to the future, when it comes to the CFL maybe partnering with American leagues, do you think there's a way to not only keep the CFL history, to keep the CFL game, but, you know, to keep, to grow the game, I guess, way to keep the Canadian game alive without losing what makes the Canadian game so special? Do you think there's a way forward?
Yeah, well, that's a huge question because, you know, it's like there's a place just outside of Toronto called, there are two places, Kitchener and Waterloo. They're side by side, they're each cities. And so I remember saying to one guy, well, why don't you amalgamate? He says, oh, we'll amalgamate as long as they call it Kitchener. and the other guy says, well, you know, we would too, but they got to call it Waterloo type of thing. And in a way, that would be a conundrum. I don't know if you know, the big differences, I think, between American and Canadian approaches to football is no motion before the ball is snapped,
right,
versus motion before snap. 1 yard scrimmage versus no yard scrimmage. You know, and 11 men, and who knows, could be women too, but 11 people versus 12 people,
mm-hmm.
type of thing. 60 yards wide and 110 field, 20 yard end zones versus 153, 10 yards. And the goalposts, little bit thing, you know, instead of having them on the goal line, 10 yards back type of thing. So I don't know who would be able to choreograph something that would be kind of an approach to what teams could make. Because the American game, I think, I'm guessing there's probably more power involved in the American game versus not power, but as much as suaveness, or you know, it's
finesse.
Very soft. Yeah, you're not going to see a lot of 300-pound linemen because they're too slow, basically,
right,
in the Canadian game, and you somehow have to be able to have swiftness, have agility. And I'm not saying that the larger people don't have that, but I think that, and then also the play too now of bringing in a quarterback and pushing him from behind, really, in order to make that half a yard or yard.
Yeah.
It used to be barred at one time, but I think it's back. So I don't think it'll ever attract any global type of thing, because people wouldn't give up what they think, you know,
right,
real football is. So I don't know.
Yeah, and like you said, you've talked to people. I mean, and that's kind of the conundrum. I sit there and I hear people's opinions, and maybe I'm just a little tuned into Twitter a little too much. But when I hear people give their opinions, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, when it comes to, you know, I think both leagues could partner. But when it comes to literally merging, yeah, it's difficult. And it's I agree with you. I'm hopeful they can figure this out. And, you know, obviously one of the big issues, at least in the States, is just stadium size. I mean, you know, we don't want to see Canadian football being played in the Liberty Bowl again like it was. And, you know, basically it looked like Arena League football with walls and ramps and everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, obviously San Antonio, they were able to fit a CFL type field there. And back when, you know, the Baltimore team played, Memorial Stadium could accommodate barely, but it was able to accommodate a full size CFL field. But yeah, it's just, it's, you know, I mean, hopefully there are people out there that can figure this out for the good of all everybody, but especially for the people of Canada who, you know, this league is older, you know, the Canadian League in whatever form it is really, to me, older than the NFL. I don't know. Did you hear about the commercial that they had down here from one of the whiskey people about talking about all the great things about Canada during the Super Bowl?
I think it was on our news.
It was okay. Yeah. And it's like, Canada invented. Yeah. I mean, so I get very defensive, you know, I get very defensive when it comes to people who are American criticizing Canada. Part of it has to do with, I grew up in a region that was settled by French Canadians. So if it weren't for the French Canadians, I may not have been, you know, I've got, you know, I may not have been born, who knows, but when it comes to I think there's a way to keep football in Canada growing and thriving. It's just, you know, I mean, it does get frustrating for me, for you, and you, not only did you grow up with the game, you played the game, you won Grey Cup championships, you coached, you know, I mean, you're such an awesome, wonderful career, not only with football, but in the literary realm at the university level. So, you know, I'm very grateful for you spending time with me as I sit here in my Japanese office and do the thing that once I moved here, doing these I'm going to be doing a lot more of these podcasts, because this is, for me personally, how I stay connected back home to North America and the game that I love. But Frank, before we wrap up, can you tell people how to find you, how to find your books? And, you know, for those who aren't listening, who haven't read any of Frank's books, you got to read them. I'm going to just lay it out there. You need to read them. You need to, you know, you are, as I explained to my wife yesterday, when it comes to sports history in Canada, your name is right at the top of the list, because not only do you write about football, but you also write about hockey. And your books are not just sports lessons, but history lessons in themselves. So I apologize for rambling on so long. Frank, please tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, no, first of all, I appreciate that very much. And it's been my pleasure to.
Oh, it's been my honor. Yeah, it's been my honor. It's like I feel honored with you joining me today.
I have a website called Valley Oldtimers, all one word, .com. And all the books are listed on there. You can also get them through lulu.com. I think they're down in Carolina somewhere, right. North Carolina.
And those are digital downloads.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Yeah. Some of these things I think can't be resolved, like the games, different games, and you're not going to have a world championship over this, I don't think. But, and so really, I think each country should just, you know, in Australia, if you say football, you're talking about Aussie rules. Mm-hmm. In the United States, you're thinking the NFL or the AFL. In Canada, you're thinking the CFL. All of them say it's football, and somebody else is going to say, well, what do you mean football? It's soccer type of thing.
I get that here a lot in Japan, believe me.
Yeah. So, but maybe they're just not meant to be combined or keep them as an enigma,
right?
And don't unwrap them.
Okay, all right. Oh, okay, I understand where you're coming. And I too also have that point of view.
Yeah.
But then every now and then that American side in me will start taking over. It's like, yeah, we can figure this. Yeah. And then, you know, but like you said, I mean, I always look at Canadian football in many ways, a different sport. You know, it's similar. It's much like when it comes to Gaelic football and Australian rules football.
Yeah.
A lot of similarities, but there are differences. Yeah. Yeah, much like living in America versus living in Japan. I mean, coming here, adjusting. Yeah,
yeah.
A lot of similarities, but there are differences too. And it's those differences that if you don't know what they are, can always trip you up. Much like an American coach going to Canada and forgetting, oh, that's right. There's only three downs. With that said, Frank, thank you very much for joining both Scott and I. And Scott checked in. He is safe down there. I think he went down to the basement. The tornadoes, the warnings have passed. However, he couldn't join us because the power apparently went out and his battery was dying. So that's why he wasn't able to jump back on. So, well, everybody who's listening, thank you very much for tuning in. Frank, at some point here, once we get close, because the Canadian season is going to be coming up soon. So I'm hoping we can have you on much sooner rather than later. Once we get closer to the season, maybe talk a little bit more about, you know, what I'd like to do is talk more about each team's history. And I'd love to have you on to talk about, you know, the Ticat history, because you playing up there brings that added dimension that, you know, other writers just can't give the sport, having suited up. And just as a sidebar, my favorite football card of yours is you with the Eskimo helmet and the 2-bar face mask. And I'm like, you know, I looked at that before we came on just to remind me, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, this is so awesome. So awesome. So, well, everybody, thank you very much for tuning in. And on behalf of Scott and myself, thank you for listening. Frank, thank you for joining us. And everybody, we will talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.
We'll kick off for victory. Cheer them on to the Grey Cup march. Lusty men of energy, down the field on the Grey Cup march.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.